Welcome back, everybody, to Quid Pro Quo, the musical channel, where we discuss progressive rock music. And I'm doing a little bit of a rebrand, a little bit of a rejigging of how I'm approaching this channel and this podcast. So for those of you listening in on the podcast, you can now actually watch us on YouTube. This was something that I was doing in the first season that I really enjoyed doing, but wasn't really getting the numbers that I was hoping for. So I just kind of left it to the wayside on the second season, but I had a fantastic guest this week that I thought was the perfect opportunity to kind of shake things up a little bit. So you can watch this episode as I am currently moving my arms around on YouTube, because this is also in tandem up on YouTube. So all of my YouTubers, thank you for tuning in. You can also listen to this on a podcast form if that's how you want to get the information. And today I'm speaking with Neve, the prog nerd on YouTube. I've left her information down below if you want to go follow her. And honestly, if you're following this show, I would be shocked if you're not also following hers. So yeah, a little bit of a rejig, a little bit of a restructure. Instead of doing the whole, doing the introduction where we introduce the albums, then splitting off and then coming back and listening to it, we've listened to the albums of choice before even coming to the table. Now, these were albums that neither of us had heard prior to this, so we are still kind of getting the first impression, and honestly, both of us listened to the album just before recording the podcast, so that is still kind of kept in vain where we're getting that first impression. But I didn't want to do the whole record about 20 minutes, then break, then come back and record about 45 minutes. I just wanted to do the whole 45 minutes right from the get-go. So I think that's going to be the structure moving forward. Let me know what you think about this new structure, if you loved it or if you hated it, or other ways that we can kind of improve this little show by commenting down below or engaging with us on social media. You can follow us on Twitter at Prog Quo. You can follow us on Instagram at Prog Quo Pod. And if you would be so kind, you could also send us an email. The email address is quidprogquo@gmail.com. So if you have any kind words, please send it to us. But that's enough of me yammering on. You know, I want to cut this a little bit short. I want to thank Explosive Ear Candy for their track Altogether Now, which is the soundtrack to the podcast and the show, as well as Leanna Osinski, who did the graphic for this little show that we've got. So without further ado, let's dive into this episode, this week's episode, and a reminder that it's only going once a month. I'm still going to maintain that, and apologies for the no podcast last month, but I think this episode more than makes up for it. So I hope you enjoy. Let's dive into this month's episode. Welcome back, everybody, to Quid Pro Quo. We're shifting up the structure a little bit, and I figured this has been an episode that's been a long time coming. So thank you so much for finally joining us, Neve, and coming onto the channel. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, I'm Neve the Prog Nerd. If you haven't checked out my channel already, maybe you should. I talk about prog and I talk about other music now, which has stirred a lot of controversy for some reason. I'm very happy to be here. I don't know how long we had this video in the works, but it's been too long.
It's almost been a full year. It's probably been a full year, if not more. I've been loving the direction of your channel. I'm like also a really big metal fan. I have a metal podcast that just talks strictly about metal music, so I've been loving to see more metal stuff on your channel. So don't worry about what everybody else says. It's do what you want to do.
That's literally the approach I'm taking. I'm just happy to be talking about other types of music on the channel, because after a while, after talking about prog for like 2 years straight, it kind of limits me and the content I can make without repeating
myself. Yeah, there's so much great music out there. I don't want to just be felt in one box, you know? I want to explore everything that I love. So, so I've left all of Neve's information down below in terms of her channel, socials if she wants. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, it's in the description. So yeah, speaking about metal music, we're talking about the two members of Pink Floyd. Very proggy of us.
It's actually been really nice listening to it, just a break from listening to so much metal at the moment.
It's true. Yeah, all of my favorite records this year have been metal music, so it was kind of good to get really into some deep prog stuff. And as we were thinking about what we wanted to do for our episode, we both realized that I had never listened to some of the back catalog of Roger Waters' solo career, and you had never listened to David Gilmour's stuff.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I've loved David Gilmour's solo stuff. I've listened to all four of his records, and I've given you what I think is his, at least my favorite of his. I don't know if people would say it's his best, but it's my personal favorite. So which one did you give me? And then I'll talk about which one I gave you.
I think you picked it, didn't you? You picked the Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, I realized I had never listened to it. I had heard a couple of his solo works. I've heard selections of Amused to Death because I've seen him live a couple of times. And
that's probably my favorite of his solo stuff. But we can talk about that in a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've never sat down and listened to that one, but I've heard sections of it. And I've listened to, is this the life we want or is this the life we really
the recent
want?
One. Yeah. His most recent solo album, yeah.
Yeah, which it was fine. Like, I...
It was fine.
It was fine. And later on today, I'm going to be diving deeper into his... I've been calling it Dark Side of the Moon Rogers version, very similar to how Taylor's been doing all of her albums again. Yeah. So, yeah, pray for Mojo in that case. But, yeah, I realized I had never sat down and listened to The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking, even though like everybody's pointed to that one being one of his better ones, that and Amused to Death.
Yeah, so. I prefer Amused to Death personally. I've got more of a kind of personal connection with that record. I mean, my boyfriend Jan actually was the one to recommend it to me because I grew up with Pink Floyd, but I'd never listened to anything outside of the band. And he gives me this record, Amused to Death, and I'm like, I'm not sure because I'm a bit iffy on Roger himself. So I was like okay, fine, I'll listen to it, and it turned out to be a really great record. I think I did a review of it many year ago, but it's a really great record. It's probably my favorite of his. I love just kind of the themes throughout are just so dark, and the way it's executed, I think it's just perfect.
Okay, so yeah, maybe I'll return to that one, because yeah, this one, now I know that back in the day when they were trying to figure out what to follow up Animals with, he pitched both this project and The Wall to Pink Floyd to do, and The Wall was the one that got chosen. So a number of years later, he decided to actually fulfill this idea in an album, and I can hear the similarities. I'm not going to get too deep because I think we'll talk about both of our albums, but the album that I gave you. Now, had you listened to any of David Gilmour's solo works prior to this?
I had listened to his first solo album, but it was ages ago. And it wasn't one that I fully remembered because I think I must have listened to it really quickly or just didn't have enough time to soak it in. So I'm wasn't as familiar. So it was really great to dig into that as someone who's more familiar with Rogers. It's more, yeah. I was really excited to listen to it actually.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like we come from very similar families in that, like, my dad was the one that introduced me to prog, and he was the one that loved David Gilmour's work. So he had all of his solo stuff, and he wasn't a big fan of Roger Waters. So, like, I think the closest that we got to a Roger Waters solo project was The Wall and The Final Cut, but, like, he didn't own anything else. He's just like, nah, it's too depressing, too dour, too, like... socially conscious. I just want to listen to guitars going wee woo wee woo wee woo. So that's what we're going to listen to on David Gilmour's stuff. So yeah, I had given you On an Island. So I would love to hear what your thoughts are about that album.
Yeah, I obviously knew. I just felt, just from like a gut feeling, just because I love Pink Floyd and I love him as a guitarist, that I knew I was going to enjoy the record anyway. I really like his playing style. So I was like really ready to listen to it. And the first thing I kind of realized after I finished listening to the album was how well the album art reflects on the music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just a random note, it just, it suits it so well. Like that kind of whimsical, kind of ethereal looking album cover with the whimsical and ethereal music, which was actually one way I would really like to describe the album was, and the instrumental pieces throughout were really, really lovely to listen to. And there were parts where I thought, I swear this could be in like a film. This sounds like it could be like a film score.
Yeah.
And it was just such a beautifully put together record. I love the production, because as a production student, my ears are completely tuned to that now. Like, I will point out little intricacies in all the album, all the music I listen to now, which is, I guess it can be a good thing, but also it can ruin a lot of music where, like, you'll have a really good idea, but the production just isn't good. But on this record, I really loved the production and the way it's balanced.
Mm-hmm.
Really lovely. Obviously, the solos, perfection. Always perfection with Dave Gilmour. Wouldn't have expected any less. And it was a really nice kind of melancholic sound as well, because he does a lot of that kind of pentatonic sound. So love that, kind of made me weep kind of sound. And yeah, it's, you definitely can tell it's him all the time. You'll hear a solo, even just the sound of the music and the way that it's written, you know, it's something that's created by Dave Gilmour. But it is detached from Pink Floyd. You can tell it's not part of the same kind of universe. Does that make any sense?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, and, like the DNA is there, but it's missing, you know, the Roger White and the Nick Mason, for example.
Yeah, I think, isn't Rick Wright on this record?
He does play quite a bit.
I did a little bit of background research into the album, and I saw he plays keys, I think, on it as well.
Yeah, and when they toured, he actually toured with David, which was the live album that was touring this. They played Echoes for the last time, and David was like, I'm not going to do Echoes without the keyboardist, like, straight up. That's, and it's like, yeah, for sure. That's just as much his song as it is anybody else's.
And I loved when hearing a saxophone. I love a saxophone, especially in kind of progressive rock music. Just adds a really nice ambience. Except you've got like two sides of saxophone in progressive rock. You've got the right, like, more smooth kind of side of it, which is this, but then you've got like the abrasive, like, of like King Crimson.
Yeah, King Crimson or Van der Graaf, right? It's just like the
it's a lot, but it's wonderful. But I love when it's kind of stripped down to its kind of more melodic-y and smoothness. I guess. I just overall just really, really love the record, and his voice has aged so perfectly. It's wonderful.
I'm loving that, like, a lot of older bands that have just great vocalists seem to be aging very well in theirs, and there are a few that maybe aren't so much, but I am very glad that David's voice, I mean, this was done over 10 years ago. I think it was 2006. 2006. But even still, it feels very lived in and very crisp. You can tell, like, this is somebody that has lived with this voice for so long. He knows exactly how to structure a song around it.
Yes, definitely, for sure. And the way the music intertwines with the vocals as well, it's just perfect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe, people can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe most of the saxophone on this record is actually done by David himself. I feel he's the one that's doing a lot of the saxophone playing on here.
That's cool. I had no idea if that's the case.
Yeah, because I want to say, like, I have a couple of the live recordings that he did, and I want to say it's him doing the saxophone in the live show. So,
oh wow,
yeah, so
that's cool.
Yeah, I know. I remember, because I listened to this album when it first came out, and for me it brings memories of, like, very deep winter, like lots of snow, that kind of darkness, but like almost like a warm darkness. Like, it's cold outside, but it's warm in where I am right now. Like, the sun's gone down by like 4 o'clock, because I'm a little bit higher up on the northern hemisphere here. So, like, once it hits November, it's like midnight by 4:30. And so having this, like, prolonged darkness, but being inside where there's a warm fire and some very, like, cozy lights and cozy blankets. Like, that's the overall feel that I get, even with like the first track and a couple of those smaller tracks, like This Is Heaven and Smile, and the last two tracks of A Pocket Full of Stones and Where We Start. There's that synthesized sound that he uses to start and end the album that always reminds me of this very deep, dark winter, but it's not like a cold winter. It's not like a brutal winter. It's just like a very, I can't think of a better word, but snuggly. Like, it's a very snuggly kind of winter.
I know what you mean. Yeah, because I wrote about, going back to production again, how the production, it felt warm and rich.
Yeah.
That's the kind of vibe I got from that style of production.
Amazing. Yeah, it's like a warm darkness that I love. Because musically, I feel like it's very dark, but not in a like a scary way. Like, not quite like in a Halloween way. More in like, it's after Christmas, and so we're still kind of enjoying the Christmas glow. But it doesn't have that like bright, happy, fun times that Christmas is always associated with.
That's a good way to put it, actually. I put it better myself.
So yeah, that was my ties to this. Was there any song on this album that like really stood out for you? Because I have a couple that I will return to individually, even though more often than not, I'm going to sit down and listen to this album from start to finish.
Yeah, I loved the first two tracks. Definitely the first track was like, it really got me in just on that first one alone. But I also really loved Red Sky at Night.
Mm-hmm.
I think my highlight right in the middle of the album. Just, I loved that little instrumental.
Yeah, and I believe, I'm trying to remember, on the island, the title track, they had, Crosby and Stills? They had some individuals come on to harmonize, and I want to say it was Crosby and Stills from Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, or maybe it was Crosby and Nash. Either or, they got two of them from that band to help harmonize with David.
That makes so much sense. The way that the harmonies are structured, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself now that I can't remember which two it was, but yeah, it was every time I listen to that title track, I love the harmonies on it. I love how like full bodied it is.
Yeah,
I also love Red Sky at Night. I already love the title track. For me, I also love Take a Breath, which is kind of the big rocking track off of the album. And I remember when this album first was released, the local rock station on the radio would actually play this song every once in a while in the rotation for about the first couple of months this album was out. So it got a little bit of airplay.
All right. I think I did some research. I think it went to number one here when it came out in the UK. So that would make
sense. I wouldn't be surprised. In Canada, I always find it's hit and miss with these kinds of things. Either it does really, really well, or it's like it does well for 1 week and then everybody's forgot about it. So
yeah, we have that a bit nowadays where like something will get really big, everyone will talk about it for like a couple of weeks, and then all of a sudden it's like, remember when that came out? Remember that one thing?
It was last week. Do you guys not remember that?
And then they moved on to something else.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that I feel like music nowadays, and I hate being that whole, well, music nowadays, back in my day, but like, I don't know, it doesn't have that same kind of stay power. And I know for me, part of the reason is just because I'm reviewing albums every single week. So almost in necessity, I have to move on to the next big thing. But like, I don't know, when this album came out, it was like all I was listening to for a couple of months. And that was kind of the norm of, yeah, you would be obsessed with an album for a couple of months before moving on to the next album. And now I'm lucky to be obsessed with an album for a week. So
yeah, I get that. Yeah. Well.
Amazing. So yeah, I would ask, like, is this something that you would return to? Are you going to dig deeper into David's back catalog?
I think I might now, because I really did enjoy that record. It's definitely one I'd return to. I've got the whole thing saved on Spotify now, so.
Oh, amazing.
I'll definitely return back to it in a calm moment when I'm done with music. So like, wow.
Yeah, the follow-up to this album, Rattle That Lock, I feel has better songs, but it's not as strong of an album, if that makes sense. Like, there are individual songs that I like more on Rattle That Lock, but the overall album as a whole, I wasn't as excited about. if that makes any kind of sense.
No, that makes sense. Yeah.
So yeah, I would recommend checking that one out. But yeah, we can talk, we can switch gears now and talk about the pros and cons of hitchhiking, as I had my first spin on it today. I actually picked this up maybe about a half year ago at my local record store, because we were planning to do this. And I'm like, oh, this is a great opportunity to pick this up. I'll listen to it for the first time on vinyl. And yeah, it was interesting. I wish I could be more favorable to this album as you were for David Gilmour's album. In many ways, go for it.
It's nice to have a bit of controversy, you know, back and forth. Well,
yeah, I feel like this was very, very, very similar to the final cut in terms of music, in terms of themes, in terms of style. Like production wise, it's fantastic. You know, it's very competent. I love how, because I thought once David Gilmour was no longer working with Roger Waters, that there would be a void of guitars, but I was happy to hear the amount of guitar solos on this record. So I enjoyed that part, but yeah, for the most part, I felt like this was a Final Cut continuation, a Final Cut kind of like the sister album to that. Now I find that this one is a little bit more engaging to the Final Cut, because the Final Cut is just so isolating and so like almost asking you not to enjoy it. Like, I know that's a little harsh, but like the subject matter and the actual, like the concept of the album is very like dour, and this one is at least a little bit more, come on guys, let's do this, let's pull together, rather than everything sucks and everybody's like horrible. Like, this is almost the counter to that in terms of thematics. But musically, I'm listening to it, I'm like, yeah, this sounds very similar to a lot of the music that I heard from the Final Cut. So like, if I had picked this up back in the mid 80s, I think it was like 84 that this came out. Yeah, 84. I would have been a little disappointed. I would have been like, oh man, this is just treading water, pardon the pun. But at least like the second side picked up for me. Like, the first side was a little dour. I was a little disappointed with. But the title track, the pros and cons of hitchhiking itself, I was like, oh, it's starting to pick up. I love the catchiness of the chorus. It was really the only track that really kind of stood out for me. But yeah, those are my kind of big 2 cents, broad brush strokes of the pros and cons of hitchhiking.
Yeah, I think I love his writing style, like the way he writes lyrics and stuff like that. I guess because I'm a fan of kind of gloomy, dark music and dark production, dark playing. So that's why if I had to kind of pick something from the Dave Gilmour album that I would wish was there, was Roger's songwriting, like his lyrics. Like, I just like, I guess because they're very kind of, I'm not a political person, but it's interesting how politically charged the lyrics and the themes are. You know, and I think with Dave's solo stuff, that's kind of missing, because that's what I love about Pink Floyd. It's the reason why Animals is my favorite record of theirs, is because you've got the kind of dark, politically charged lyrics plus amazing guitar solo. So that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's the marriage of the two worlds that I love about Pink Floyd. And it was interesting listening to this album, and specifically on the first side, I forgot how much I truly love Roger's bass work, because the bass on this album is fantastic. I love the rhythm styles. I love his commanding of, like, knowing how a rhythm style of a guitar can really bring about the themes of the song. And I don't want to, you know, diss on anything that David Gilmour's done, but I feel like that same kind of mastery isn't found. You know, David is much better at orchestrating harmonies and bringing about, you know, great swelling guitars, whereas Roger is much better at constructing this rhythm and this groove. So yeah, there were a couple of moments on this record that I really was like, wow, I forgot how much of a master Roger is on the bass work.
Yeah, I find that like his bass playing is underrated in not just his solo stuff, but in the Floyd stuff as well. It's the perfect connection between the drums and the guitar. He fills the space really, really nicely. And so that's, I find that a lot with my favorite bass players, because I'm a bassist myself. So
yeah,
I want to just have that connection with the rhythm rather than trying to play something at like a million miles an hour.
Oh, absolutely. It's part of the reason why One of These Days is one of my favorite Pink Floyd songs. It's all bass. And I love it.
It's brilliant.
No, absolutely. And that's part of the reason why I love it. Like, for me, one of my favorite parts of music is sitting there and thinking, this is so simple. Why hasn't anybody else done this before? Like, it's just so clear. Like, it's astounding that it's taken this long for somebody to come up with either this root or this style, because of how infectious it is. And I feel like with Roger's playing style, that leads itself very similarly to that. Because it is, on the one hand, it is very simple, but at the same time, it's so infectious, it's so catchy, and it works very well with whatever song he's playing in.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. Agree with that one, yeah.
Yeah. So if anything, this album has made me interested to actually sit down and listen to Amused to Death from start to finish. Because, yeah, for the most part, I've always been a little hesitant with Roger's solo work. My favorite song from him is actually a song that he did for a movie called The Last Mimsy, called Hello, I Love You. And the extended version of the song goes on for like 7 minutes or so. And it has everything that I love about Roger without being overly like socially conscious. It's like, okay, this is for a kid's movie that's a little bit on the deeper side, so I can allow myself to be a little deep, but I have to remember this is a kid's movie. So, you know, I'm not going to be tackling anything too socially political in this particular track, and it's my favorite track from him.
Yeah, I probably couldn't pick one. I'd have to go back through his solo works to try and actually find one, but Amused to Death is such a fantastic record. You know, it's just really, I don't know how to explain it. It takes you aback.
Okay.
Like, the first time I listened to it, I was like, whoa, okay, I've not really heard anyone kind of write like this or play like this before. So I even invested my money into buying the vinyl version of it as well, because I was like, I love this album a lot. And so does my boyfriend. We just listened to it together, and it's a sad time, but it's a great record.
It's a sad time, but it's a good sad, right? It's I akin it to like you know, a lot of the 80s new wave stuff with like the happy sad of like the Smiths or Elliott Smith or something like that, where it's like, it's sad, but it makes you feel happy because it's sad.
Particularly Elliott Smith.
Yeah. Particularly Elliott Smith, for sure. Now, is Amused to Death, is that the one that has It Makes Perfect Sense? Because I've seen that one be played time and time again in the live setting. I'm like, I like this song. I would actually find the album that this is on and listen to it.
Yeah, that's on Amused to Death. And the way it kind of runs in with the, and it sits in the rest of the album, is just...
Okay. Amazing. Yeah, because the first time I saw Roger Waters was when he did the Dark Side of the Moon concert in 2007, and he played that song, and I'm like, I've never heard this song before, because he was doing a lot of Pink Floyd stuff, but I fell in love with it, and I haven't gone back and listened to it outside of a couple of his live shows. But maybe you've convinced me on actually dipping my toe into Roger's music, because at this point I've just had the Dark Side of the Moon, and Is This the Life That We Want, or Is This the Life That We Truly Deserve, or whatever that longer title one was.
That was one that I couldn't grasp. I mean, it's musically it's great, but it's just the voice.
Unfortunately, I feel like Roger's voice hasn't quite aged the same way that David's voice has aged. You know,
it's just very.
Very monotone. You know?
It's nothing to it, really. There's no kind of dynamics. It's just kind of one line.
Exactly.
One continuous extreme of nothing. That might be a bit harsh, but I think sometimes it works. I found what I said in my video about the new remix, but I won't get into that. But what I find about Roger's voice is that I think it works a lot better in his solo work than it does in that.
Yeah.
It's because he's, you know, writing his own songs to go with that kind of vocal, and it works in that sense. But taking something that's already been done perfectly, and changing it around, I respect the idea 100%, but I just don't think the execution was all that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's most people's take of the album. So I mean, that's very similar to my take. But yeah, I still need to actually sit down and listen to the whole thing, because as we were talking before we sat down to record, I started listening to it and I fell asleep. So, you know, that's kind of how I am with that Dark Side of the Moon redo, or redux, or however you want to pronounce it. But yeah, thanks for coming on and chatting about some Pink Floyd solo records. Yeah, is there anything you want to leave the listener and watcher with?
Listen to the album that I listened to before this video. It was absolutely fantastic. I guarantee all those people who are into progressive rock, and even if you're not into progressive rock, I think you'd still enjoy it. If you like a little bit of kind of chilled out vibe, but with really sick guitar solos, then this is definitely your album.
Yeah, if you haven't sat down and listened to On an Island yet, you got to do it. You have to sit and listen to it. And if you haven't listened to Amused to Death, like I have, which is what I'm going to do after this, listen to that as well. The pros and cons of Hitchhiking was fine, I will say. It was fine. I am glad that he chose to do The Wall rather than this one for Pink Floyd. Oh boy, we would have had a very different history for the Pink Floyd discography. That's for sure.
So, definitely.
Yeah. Thank you once again for coming on. I've left Neve's information all down below, so you can follow her on YouTube. She does amazing videos. Until our next one, everybody just be sure to keep sharing music, and we'll catch you in the next video and podcast. So great, we're all together.